Welcome to The Weekly, a look back at WHQR's top stories of the past 7 days. It's Saturday, August 1st. I'm Caitlin Freund, and this is The Weekly. The new Hanover County School Board voted 6-1 at its Tuesday meeting to abandon its previous plan for a hybrid reopening of schools. That's a mix of in-class and online instruction, and open instead online only. WHQR's Rachel Keith has the details.
Interim School Superintendent Del Burns says he's changed his mind. The school system is just not ready to open under Plan B, the hybrid option involving both online learning and in-person classes.
There are many questions yet to be answered, big questions, such as what happens when a child tests positive? What happens when a teacher tests positive? What happens when a young child is screened at a bus stop and has a fever? How are symptomatic children and staff cared for, and how are others protected given the nature of classrooms and schools for extended periods of time?
Burns said Plan B may still be a possibility in the future, but that the current level of COVID-19 cases will not allow in-person instruction. Throughout the evening, school officials made presentations on communications, operations, curriculum and instruction, finance, and health. Most of them pointed to what Burns said at the beginning of the meeting. There needs to be more time to plan adequately for students to return to buildings. School board member David Wortman was the lone vote in opposition to the online-only plan, saying that students need in-class instruction and that the district had 3 months to prepare a plan.
I think that not opening up the schools creates a huge gap in equity. By not having that face-to-face instruction or not giving parents the option of that face-to-face instruction.
The district officials also reported that there are 6 nurse vacancies for the county out of the 41 who serve the schools. Rachel Keith, WHQR News.
At his press conference on Tuesday, Governor Cooper announced a curfew on alcohol sales, setting 11 p.m. as last call for restaurants statewide. The new restriction went into effect Friday, July 31st. The executive order comes as college students are returning to campuses across the state. WHQR's Rachel Lewis-Hilburn has more.
Stable is good, but decreasing is better.
3 of the 4 coronavirus metrics are either leveling off or ticking down in North Carolina. The only number going up, hospitalizations, is a lagging indicator. And Governor Roy Cooper says the current data shows masks and social distancing measures are working. But because new cases are going up in the 25 to 49 age range and college students are coming to the state for the start of the academic year, Governor Cooper is announcing a statewide curfew on alcohol sales in restaurants.
Effective this Friday, July the 31st, restaurants must stop selling alcoholic drinks after 11 p.m. Bars will remain closed. Public health experts and examples from other states show that bars and other places where people gather closely together are a high transmission setting for this virus. We want to prevent restaurants from turning into bars after hours.
Cooper notes that the governor of Texas has expressed regret over opening bars too early in a state now seeing its COVID-19 caseload spiking. Cooper also says his administration is working on further economic relief for those struggling to pay rent and utilities. Those details, he says, are coming soon. Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, WHQR News.
It's been over 120 years since Wilmington's coup d'etat, and racial inequities persist. WHQR's Hannah Brazinger spoke with local community leader Hollis Briggs about confronting the Port City's past while working to create a more just future.
Wilmington was the last stronghold of the Confederacy, and I think some of that bad blood kind of lingered on.
That's Hollis Briggs, chairman of the MLK Celebration Committee in southeastern North Carolina. He spoke with me over the phone and explained that the 1898 coup d'etat essentially erased the achievements of Black Wilmingtonians, paving the way for fewer resources, fewer opportunities, and decades of discrimination.
Our history was taken away, and the history of the Confederacy was put out for everyone to see. And that's not how this city was built. The city was not built on the Confederacy. This city was a bustling city that had about 85% African American who were doctors, lawyers. They owned lots of property. And if you look at the property ownership change from the 50s to now, you'll see that African Americans owned almost 60% of the property in Wilmington. And now certain families own all that land. They didn't buy it from them. They took it. All that labor that African Americans provided for cheap or nothing has turned into some of those people becoming millionaires and billionaires off the backs of African Americans in this area. That's not fair.
A lot of different ideas are being brought up right now regarding addressing Wilmington's history and racism. When you think of long-term tangible change in the city, what specific issues are at the top of your priority list?
Economic development.
Briggs explains that there needs to be some mechanism that allows the middle class to learn trades not just in college, but at an early age, like 13 or 14. And he thinks the city's lack of blue-collar jobs and opportunities play a role in driving crime up. A lot of advocates are arguing that a different allocation of city funds, less towards police departments and more towards community resources, can also lower crime and improve the lives of those who are underserved. Do you look at this as a potential solution?
A lot of things that the police have purchased and the city council gives them a green light to purchase anything that they need to provide safety for the citizens of the city of Wilmington, a lot of those things were not necessary. Some of that paramilitary equipment that they bought was actually not necessary. They could have put that money into that community center out there. So I don't think totally defunding the police is the right thing. I think we need to, I'm going to change the wording, and we need to allocate the funding more properly.
There's obviously also been talk and some actions specifically about names of parks and schools, city streets that are named after Confederate figures or white supremacists who played a role in 1898. A Black Lives Matter mural has been proposed, and I know there's been discourse about whether or not these changes would be meaningful or simply symbolic and maybe a distraction from greater potential change. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I lived in the city of Atlanta when those historic mayors started changing street names that were named after Ku Klux Klan members. So the city of Atlanta systematically started changing the names of streets and naming them after civil rights leaders. It gives people a sense of pride more so than anything else to live on a street named after a civil rights leader.
Street name changes probably won't be happening here anytime soon, thanks to a city moratorium put into place in 2019 to update and improve the current street naming policy. Still, I asked Briggs about his hopes for Wilmington's future.
You know, as a child, I knew how bad the racism was here in Wilmington, and I left, and I went to school in Atlanta. And once I got to Atlanta, I saw a brand new America, and it was one that I fell in love with, and so I've seen it work.
Hannah Braysinger, WHQR News.
And as citizen groups work to eliminate reminders of the city's racist past, WHQR's Hannah Braysinger also took an in-depth look at the complicated process of changing some of Wilmington's street names. For that full report, go to WHQR.org. You're listening to The Weekly from WHQR Public Media. On Coastline this past week, WHQR's Rachel Lewis Hilburn spoke with guest Fracaswell Hyman about his second book in the Mango series. Hyman is also an actor, writer, producer, and director of children's television. You can find that full conversation at WHQR.org. On this week's Around Town with Rhonda Bellamy, Rhonda spoke to Tony Rivenbark, the director of Thalian Hall, who reflected on the legacy of the late Wilmington actress and broadcaster Kitty Fitzgibbon. Listen online at WHQR.org. Finally, as the week ended Friday, Hurricane Isaias was headed our way. All Things Considered carried a special live briefing from Governor Roy Cooper, along with forecasts about when the storm might arrive and advice about preparing, especially in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic.
As of this afternoon, National Weather Service meteorologists say they expect the timing of wind, storm surge, and rain to be Sunday evening through Monday evening. And North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper just said that some of those impacts could stretch into Tuesday.
For more on preparing for the storm, go to readync.org. So this weekend and early next, be careful and stay safe. And that's what's happening in the Cape Fear region. You can listen to our continued news coverage at 91.3 FM or visit our website to stream us online anytime at whqr.org. For WHQR News, I'm Caitlin Freund, and this is The Weekly.